Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the seventh canto, entitled The Science of God. And this is chapter 15, the instructions for civilized human beings. And we're on text number 57. Adav ante jananam sad bahir antaha paravaram jnanam jyeyam vacho vacham tamo jyotis tva ayam swayam adavante jananam sad bahiranta paravaram jnanam geyam vacho vacham tamo jyotis ayam swayam adavante jananam sad bahiranta paravaram jnanam geyam vacho vacham tamo jyotis tva ayam swayam adavante jananam sad bahiranta paravaram jnanam geyam vacho vacham tamo jyotis tva ayam swayam. Vaishnavis, anyone else? Sorry. Ado, in the beginning. Ante, at the end. Jananam, of all living entities, Sat, always existing, Bahi, externally, Antaha, internally, Para, transcendental, Avaram, material, Jnanam, knowledge, Gyeyam, the objective, Vachaha, expression, Vacham, the ultimate object, Tamaha, darkness, Jyoti, light, Tu, indeed, Ayam, this one, the Supreme Lord, Swayam, himself. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. He who exists internally and externally, at the beginning and end of everything, and of all living beings, as that which is enjoyable, and as the enjoyer of everything, superior and inferior, is the Supreme Truth. He always exists as knowledge and the object of knowledge, as expression and the object of understanding, as darkness and as light. Thus he, the Supreme Lord, is everything. Please repeat. He who exists internally and externally, at the beginning and end of everything, and of all living beings, as that which is enjoyable, and as the enjoyer of everything, superior and inferior, is the Supreme Truth. He always exists as knowledge and the object of knowledge, as expression and the object of understanding, as darkness and as light. Thus he, the Supreme Lord, is everything. Purport. Here the Vedic aphorism, Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma, is explained. It is also explained in the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, that's the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, 9th Chapter, 33rd verse to the 36th verse. Aham eva sam eva gre. The Supreme Lord existed in the beginning. He exists after the creation and maintains everything. And after destruction, everything merges in him. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Prakritim yanti mamikam. Thus the Supreme Truth is actually everything. In the conditioned state, we are bewildered in our understanding. But in the perfect stage of liberation, we can understand that Krishna is the cause of everything. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadirari Govinda Sarvakarnam Karnam Sarvakarna Karnam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. That's from the Brahma Samhita 5.1. This is the perfection of knowledge. Srila Prabhupada ends his purport. Om Gyana Tumarandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upagadamayam Dadanti Swabhadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakopa Tubhishta Kripasindu Bhivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the verse again. Adavante Jananam Sad Bahir Anta Paravayam Gyanam Gyeyam Vacho Vacham Tamo Jyotish to Ayam Swayam. He who exists internally and externally, at the beginning and end of everything, and of all living beings, as that which is enjoyable and the enjoyer of everything, superior and inferior, is the supreme truth. He always exists as knowledge and the object of knowledge, as expression and the object of understanding, as darkness and as light. Thus he, the Supreme Lord, is everything. So this is an interesting expression of explaining here Krishna. It's like saying, you know, from one extreme to the other, and everything in between, north and south, east and west, from A to Z. Like you say, he knows everything. He knows from everything from A to Z about computers. It means he knows the first and the last things. Or as they say, if everywhere from Maine to Mexico includes everything in the United States. Texaco. From darkness to light, material to spiritual, internal, external, good, bad, everything. So it's just a way of saying that Krishna's everything, impress upon us that Krishna is actually everything. You name it, it's Krishna. So this is to impress upon us and to provoke our thinking. You know, you could just say, oh, Krishna is everything. But what does that mean? So to provoke our thinking about how Krishna is everything, it gives these different extremes and everything in between. So that's Krishna. So as devotees, we want to try to feel that and live it in our lives. Because everything is actually in Krishna's body. Everything is Krishna. There's descriptions in the first, second canto, the first steps in God realization. They give the description of the universal form of Krishna. So you can see how huge Krishna is and how everything is Krishna. So the beginning stages to actually see how Krishna is actually inconceivable, but yet he is conceivable. So his inconceivable and his conceivable and his everything in between. So we'll try to make this more clear as we'll get different references from different scriptures here. So this is, as devotees, we want to try to see Krishna in our life always. But what's preventing that? As Prabhupada mentioned, yes? Yeah, what is it? What is preventing it? What is preventing you? Your minds, yeah? Your minds are bewildered. Yes, impurities in the mind. So this is, there's so many distractions. Prabhupada mentioned in the purport here, he said that we are bewildered in the beginning stages. What is this bewilderment? There's so many distractions we're seeing here in the mature world. So many duties, so many things to occupy our minds. And then we say, okay, think of Krishna. And then we think, how can I think of Krishna? There's so many other things to think of. There's a devotee, young devotee at that time. They were just about to get Brahman initiation. And they didn't even know what it was. They had one before, but they didn't know about it until they came to where Prabhupada was. Because there was no internet at that time. So they said, we're going to get Brahman. And said, what is that? They didn't know what it was. And they said, oh, it means you're going to have to chant more mantras. So they're already struggling to chant 16 rounds, you know, especially a young mother with a young child. And then you need to add more mantras. Because we're so busy with our lives, we're thinking, how can I fit that in? So now we're saying, see Krishna everywhere. Think of Krishna always. How can I do that? I'm always thinking of other things. There's so many other responsibilities I have to think of. So how can I do that? So this is a science of Krishna consciousness. Even in Krishna consciousness, we may think, it's so bewildering. If you come here for the first time, there's different departments. You see there's a pujari department. There's the kitchen. There's the restaurant. There's different festivals, the Rath Yatra. It's bewildering. How can we understand? But Prabhupada said that a pujari means that he must be able to think of many things at once. You have to see how, you know, the offering is going to be on time, the artik, the paraphernalia is there. There's so many things you have to think of. So this is our whole science of ISKCON, is to somehow or another see Krishna as everything and make Krishna as everything in our life. So Prabhupada wanted us to mold our life in such a way that we will always think of nothing but Krishna. So there's some nice references that I found that are similar to this particular verse. There's one nice prayer by Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto, I believe. My dear Lord, you alone manifest yourself as the entire cosmic manifestation. For you existed before the creation, you exist after the annihilation, and you are the maintainer between the beginning and the end. All this is done by your external energy through actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature. Therefore, whatever exists externally and internally is you alone. So this is a vision of a pure devotee. He's seeing Krishna everywhere and is seeing how in the material world everything is happening by Krishna. So there's some nice analogies also how we can see Krishna as everything. One is time and one is the seed. So it's interesting how the seed is like the unmanifested form of the tree. It's inconceivable. But yet the manifested form is the tree we see with all its fruits and flowers and branches and leaves like that. And also time is considered to be one, just like we say it's daytime. But yeah, there's morning, there's afternoon, there's evening. There's different varieties of time. So in the same way, time is one, but yet at the same time, there's differences. So this is very nicely understood. And Prabhupada writes in this purport to this particular verse, it's very nice to see how the devotee is here. When a devotee is in a condition of so-called distress, so even distress, happiness, that's also Krishna. There's two extremes. So Prabhupada writes, he considered it a gift or a blessing from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a devotee is always thus situated in Krishna consciousness, in any condition of life, he is described as Muktipada Sadaya Bhak, a perfect candidate for returning home back to Godhead. The word Dayabak means inheritance. A son inherits the property of his father. Similarly, when a devotee is fully Krishna conscious, undisturbed by dualities, he is sure that he will return home back to Godhead, just as one inherits his father's property. So that's the vision of a devotee. So there's some also nice analogies. There is one very nice commentary by Srila Srinivas Acharya. There's a devotee that writes this bi-monthly newsletter. It's like an e-newsletter. It's called the Sri Krishna Katamrita Bindu. And it's called from the Gopal Jiu Publications. And here he actually, Prabhupada refers to the Chatur Sloka in this particular purport, how to see Krishna everywhere. So Srinivas Acharya commented on this particular, on one of the particular verses. Let's see, I think it was 2935 of the Chatur Sloki. And this is what he says. Once again, majestic Krishna is demonstrating the pastimes of his simultaneous omnipresent, yet localized, visible, yet invisible nature in this verse. So it's similar to the verse that we read today of the Chaturshloki. The five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, exhibit this quality of simultaneous omnipresence and localization, conceivability and inconceivability as follows. So this is very interesting how you can see the material elements as also inconceivable and conceivable. So he talks about the form of earth. Its omnipresent and inconceivable form is manifested as the underlying substance of the infinite universes. So earth is that underlying substance of the infinite universes. Whereas the localized and conceivable form of earth, we actually see it. Go outside and see the chunks of dirt and clay and things like that. So that's earth. So also we can see the omnipresent and inconceivable form of water. And the inconceivable form is manifest as the Karna ocean. This is where Mahavishnu is laying on the Karna ocean. Everything is coming from Karna Dakshaya Vishnu. So that's what sustains the entire universe. Whereas the localized and conceivable form of water, it conforms to the shape of our cups and different utensils and things that we use. So you can see water in its conceivable form. Glasses, things like that. In its omnipresent and inconceivable form, fire is manifest as the gleam of the Brahma Jyoti, etc. In fact, Prabhupada describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam how the Brahma Jyoti is the source of everything. Everything is emanated from the Brahma Jyoti. But yet Krishna is the source of the Brahma Jyoti. So here it's saying that fire, we talked about fire last time, how, you know, this fire is a manifestation, and that's from the Brahma Jyoti. Everything is like fire. If you wrote a book about the sun, you'd have to include everything, because everything comes from trees or source of, you know, fires within the tree. Everything is like that, light. So what is the localized conceivable form of fire? We see it every day as the giwik on the altar, you know, fire like that we see. So there's the inconceivable and conceivable form of fire. And then there's the omnipresent and inconceivable form of air. It's present everywhere around us. In fact, air is what is responsible for keeping all the planets afloat. It's not like gravity that scientists speculate, but it's actually air. It's a different manipulations of air that actually causes the planets to float. So we see that. That's inconceivable form. It's everywhere. It's around us. And it's localized and conceivable form. It manifests its form as wind. So we can see the wind. It's carrying dust and so many different things. So that's the manifested form of wind. In the omnipresent and inconceivable form of ether, it manifests as the all-pervading sky. So whereas in its localized and conceivable form, it takes on the shape of various containers, since containers limit the sky by restricting it to a certain shape. So like a box or something, you know, also again like a cup. The ether is contained within a cup, so that limits it in its conceivable form. Because ether is everywhere. In fact, that's how we get radio waves, sound waves, TV waves come. They're actually subtle forms, and they manifest out through televisions and radios like that. So that's how inconceivable form of ether and yet it's a conceivable form. So he also quotes some different verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which actually brings to more this describing of the omnipresence and inconceivable form. This is from the 10th canto. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no interior or exterior, no beginning and no end. And then he continues, Krishna saying in the 10th canto, it is me whose localization and conceivability is described in the immediate next verse. He is bound to a mortar just like an ordinary child. So just see, Krishna is inconceivable. You know, you can't. Krishna is everything, but yet he's bound by Mother Yasoda. Isn't that amazing? So in his form as the Virat Purusha Rupa, he is the underlying soul of the universe. He's omnipresent and inconceivable, whereas he can be conceived in his various two-handed, four-handed forms. And the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu supports this fact by saying, he who is omnipresent and all-pervasive is now playing in his fully manifested form within the limits of the arms of Mother Yasoda. So just see, there's the unlimited form of Krishna, but yet he's bound by the arms of Mother Yasoda. So just see, this is how Krishna is very personal. Also, we think that Krishna is so impersonal, but yet he's very personal. He's actually a person, his localized form. You can actually talk with him like we're talking now, you know, face to face. There's a nice memory from one of the devotees in San Francisco in the early days. Prabhupada hadn't been around for a while, and then he came, and this young girl, she was an artist, I think. She did the Sadbuja form painting of Krishna. But when she was a young girl, she was asking all these questions of Srila Prabhupada, very eagerly asking all these questions of Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, and then after Prabhupada's, you know, was answering and stuff, and she kept asking. And Prabhupada said, just see how eager this young girl is for Krishna. And then he pauses and he looks at her and he says, and if you like, Krishna can also kiss you. So this is Krishna, the personal form of Krishna. We can have a personal relationship with Krishna. Even though he's inconceivable, he's very conceivable. You know, he can hold him in your arms. You can serve him in the deity form. These are all inconceivable forms of Krishna. But yet, he is conceivable and is approachable. So it talks about the, you know, more about the earthly elements, how in their dissolved states, they're in their tan matra forms, whereas ether exists only as sound, and then air exists as sound and touch, and then a fire exists as sound, touch, and form, and then water exists as sound, touch, form, and taste, and then earth exists as sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. So these are states known as pravishta, they're invisible, and are perceived only by the yogis. And when these five elements are in their non-dissolved states, they take on these apravista manifestations of earth, water, fire, air, ether, these that we just mentioned, that are visible to all. So there again, in the form of their unmanifested state, they exist as these tan mantra forms, as described. So he goes on to describe more and more about how he's given different verses of how Krishna and his different pastimes is described in the 10th canto, how he's eternally going on. And a lot of the words used are the present tense, that Krishna's pastimes are going on now in Dwarka, in Mathura, in Vrindavan. They're actually going on now. So this is the eternal aspect of Krishna. But yet he's confined in these different places and is in association with different devotees. So this is how Krishna is, he's eternal and is inconceivable. But yet at the same time, he's approachable. He's huggable, he's kissable, like that. So this is amazing. So as devotees, we want to somehow or another become fixed in our service. Like there's so many bewildering activities that take up our time and so many different things. So how do we become fixed? Just like if you want to market something, they say you should look for a niche market. Something that, you know, you can find that you are good at, or you know, something that's unique that you have. So we all have these niche talents that Krishna has given us. And they say when you market, there's a couple of things that you do, is that you make a wish list of who you want to associate with, who you want to do business with. So as devotees, we've made our list. We know we want to serve Krishna. We know we want to serve the devotees. So this is, if you don't know who you want to serve, how can you come in contact with them? Similarly, if you don't know who Krishna is, you don't know how to approach this inconceivable person, how can you touch him? How can you make contact with him? So that's one of the things you do for a niche as a devotee. Prabhupada says we should become fixed up in a particular service. We become expert in something. Some devotees are very expert in writing. Some devotees very expert in music, doing different kinds of services. So you have to focus. You have to clarify what you want to market. Clarify your talents. So we have to remain one-pointed. Prabhupada describes in the verse of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So this is the fixed upness of the devotee. Prabhupada said that is actually samadhi, that we want to become fixed up in some service for Krishna. So there's another reason why we become bewildered, and that's because of these different modes of material nature, which actually come from this false ego, from this material energy. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the seventh chapter, Krishna says, deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. So the whole world's enchanted by these modes of material nature, and they're actually bewildered by them. And also another form, that's way it's described in the second canto, of how we become bewildered and distracted. There's this nice verse, it's 2:14. Persons devoid of atma-tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficient experience, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. So this is, we have to inquire into what is eternal, not be so absorbed in the material or that which is temporary. So Prabhupada mentions in a very nice purport, there's one section here, Prabhupada describes, this is from describing how the highest perfection of human life is achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by practice of mystic powers, or by perfect discharge of occupational duty, is to remember the personality guided at the end of life. And Prabhupada describes in a purport here, he says here, everyone wants to be free from all kinds of fear, and everyone wants the fullest extent of happiness in life. The perfect process for achieving this here and now is recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is uttered by such a great authority as Srila Sukadeva Goswami. By hearing about and glorifying the Lord, all a person's activities become molded into spiritual activities, and thus all conceptions of material miseries become completely vanquished. And in the next verse, at the end of the next purport, Prabhupada mentions this word again, molded our lives. And hear what he says. Everyone is anxious to achieve the highest perfection in his particular activity, and it is indicated herein that such perfection is Narayana Smriti, for which everyone must endeavor his best. In other words, life should be molded in such a manner that one is able to progressively remember the personality of Godhead in every step of life. So if you can see Krishna in every step of life, then that's understanding the inconceivable as conceivable in your life. And this is what devotees want to do. They actually want to see Krishna as everything, and they want to make Krishna everything in his life. So I'll end with this very, very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada, but the stage of an advanced devotee. This is from the fourth canto. In the advanced stage of devotional service, the devotee does not see anything separate between his own interests and those of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Both interests become one, for the devotee does not act for a separate interest. Whatever he does in the interest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At that time, he sees everything in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Personality of Godhead in everything. Having attained this stage of understanding, he sees no distinction between the spiritual and material worlds. In perfect vision, the material world becomes the spiritual world due to its being the external energy of the Supreme Lord. For the perfect devotee, the energy and the energetic are non-different. Thus, the so-called material world becomes spiritual. Sarvam kala vidam brahma. That's what Prabhupada quoted that verse, actually, in the purport today. Everything is intended for the service of the Supreme Lord, and the expert devotee can utilize any so-called material thing for the Lord's service. One cannot serve the Lord without being situated on the spiritual platform. Thus, if a so-called material thing is dovetailed in the service of the Lord, it is no longer to be considered material. Thus, the pure devotee in his perfect vision sees from all angles. So just see, even the devotee, as devotees, we can see the spiritual and the material. Not only that, we can see the spiritual within the material. Convert the material into spiritual. That is inconceivable, because everything is Krishna, and the devotee is using everything for Krishna. So that's the inconceivable nature of devotional service, which is very practical, conceivable in the life of a devotee. So any comments or questions? Oh, yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the nice class. I actually have two questions. In the verse that you read today, it says that Krishna is the enjoyer of everything. Mm-hmm. Does that also mean that he enjoys matter?
Actually, yes, Krishna.
So does he also enjoy like the living entities like that are encased in Maya and are suffering? Does he also enjoy that?
As far as enjoyment of our suffering, it's not that Krishna enjoys us suffering. But, you know, Krishna... That's the difference between Krishna and us. We're seeing things as separate from Krishna. And the whole reason why we come to the material world is because the false ego wants to be the enjoyer, separate from Krishna. So trying to enjoy in the material world causes our suffering. Krishna sees that, and he understands how we're suffering. And his enjoyment is bringing us back to our real enjoyment, which is in his service. It's not like he's some, you know, vicious or, you know, what is that term? Likes to see people punished and suffering. He's not that kind of person. That's not his enjoyment. But out of compassion and love, he actually comes himself personally to pick us up and show us what is real enjoyment.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
It's his energy, and we're using it. It's our mistake that we're using it. You know, separate from Krishna. That's why we're suffering from the false ego.
Yeah, because the verse said he's the enjoyer of everything. That's why I asked that question.
Yeah, he is.
And my other question is, you were saying that Earth is the underlying substance of all universes. Can you explain what that means?
Everything in the material world is composed of these elements, material elements. Everywhere in the universe, there's earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So the earth is like that manifested. Everything is situated in earth. All the aromas, all the smells, tastes, things come from the earth. So this earth is like the foundation of a lot of the different planets, a lot of the different things that we see and created, different forms, different things. If you analyze, it's from earth, from the earth. It's one of Krishna's five separated material energies. And it's the basis for a lot of different things that are created by Krishna. So let's see, I think over here first, and then Sachitanoy. Raised his hand first. Oh, okay, go ahead, whoever. Sorry.
We hear the expression that Krishna is everything and everything is Krishna. So there's one verse here that says, and yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Can you explain something?
Yeah, that's kind of like a nice summary of the whole class, where Krishna is simultaneously one and different from everything. And that's the philosophy propounded by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. How Krishna is everything, but yet he's not everything. So that's the perfection of that. So it's inconceivable, yet it's conceivable. I mean, Krishna's not here, but yet, look, he's here in the form of marble. He's here in the form of wood. He's here in the form of his holy name, the sound that we can actually taste and hear with our material ears, even though it's spiritual sound. And the more and more we associate with spiritual paraphernalia, spiritual items, spiritual personalities, then the more and more we'll be able to see Krishna in the material world. In fact, we'll begin to see everything as spiritual. We'll turn matter into spirit. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu. Right. Yes. It's a nice analogy. Thank you. Yeah, he was using the analogy of how the CEO of a company, you know, is in charge of everything, but yet doesn't mean he's personally there, but it's being taken over by his different representatives. So it's like Krishna doesn't really have to do anything, but everything's taken care of by his energies, his different potencies. So these are Krishna. It's like the energy and the energetic, but yet there's no difference at the same time. It's amazing. It's inconceivable. Reconceivable. Yes, any comments? Anybody else? Okay, thank you for your kind attention. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.